Now, turn on the recording. We're in chapter 3, Mishnah 5, second last Mishnah of the Masechet. We'll see if we finish today. I'm not so certain. So, let's go back over. We just started Mishnah Hay yesterday, but let's go back over it, make sure we know what's going on over here. So, Chatat Shenit Arva Bechova. We were going back to an earlier halacha, that if you had a chova, again, the simple understanding here is, although I have in my notes that other people explain it otherwise, but the simple understanding of this line is, you have at least one chatat, okay, so a bird that we know is supposed to be a chatat, and it's mixed in with a kan stuma or more than one kan stuma. Okay, so it's mixed in with an, as of now, undecided which one is an ola, which one is a chatas, but a pair of birds, or two pairs of birds, or three pairs of birds, or 18 pairs of birds, or however many pairs. Okay? The halacha is that if the Kohen asks in advance, what do we tell him? In kasher ela minyan chataot shebechova. Okay, the earlier halacha we learned was that in such a case, so let's give it again a simple example, one chatat and one kan, you may bring one chatat out of those three birds, and that's it. Why? Because again, you got to look at what are our odds here. If we bring number one as a chatat, we're safe, right? It's either the chatat that's the separate chatat, or it's one of the two birds in the kan. As soon as we bring korban number two, it's out. If we bring a second chatat, well, what if that was the second bird in the kan, of which we owed one chatat and one ola? So we can't bring a chatat. And if we bring an ola, well, what if the second one is that distinct chatat bird? So we're stuck. We can't do that.
It doesn't apply to the ola, too.
What?
It applies to the ola, too.
Correct, and we're going to reverse it in the end of the Mishnah. And we're going to reverse it in the end of the Mishnah. All right, we'll wait on that.
And these are all not designated, because if they're designated, then there's no problem.
If you knew which ones they were, then there's no problem. Then there's no Masechet Kinim.
Yeah, right. No, I understand that. I'm just saying you have to clarify that these are not designated.
Yes, if they were designated, then you couldn't even bring the first one.
You have
correct.
Problem, right?
Yep.
That's my
okay.
point.
Chovah shnayim bechatat. So now we're going to go into, just again, stating the rules of these types of mix-ups. So if you have a chatat in which the chovah, the number of kinim, is double that of the chatat, okay? So basically, what you have is, okay? If you have twice the number of birds in the kan stuma as you do of known chatat. So the classic example of that would be the case that we just gave, but that's not a great example because it's not an even number. So we want to work with even numbers here, says the Mishnah. Let's take an example of two chatats and an additional two kinim. Okay, so four other birds. Now we've got six birds in total. Two chatats and then four individual birds. So what do we do in this case? Let's think. Bird number one, can we bring it as a chatat?
Yes.
Yes, we can. It's either the chatat that was set aside or from one of the kan stumas. Bird number two, can we bring it as a chatat?
Mm-hmm.
Also yes, either from the kan stuma or the chatat. Bird number three, can we bring it as a chatat? No, because it may be the third bird from our two kan stumas, which would need to be an ola. Therefore, we bring it as an ola at that point. One second, I'm just trying to think. Sorry, and if the Kohen sprinkled them, we don't do it. Again, ideally, let's just go back one step, just because we're getting to the Mechatzah. We said, ideally, if the Kohen were to ask us, we would say, in kasher ela minyan chatot shebechova. And that would have already been reached, two chatats, and we would be done. However, if the Kohen went ahead, and this was the case, sorry, that I had over here, okay? If the Kohen went ahead and sprinkled the blood half above and half below, meaning, again, three he did like a chatat, three he did like an ola, so let's try to figure out how many are kosher. Sorry, that was the case that we're going on here. That's what I have here in my notes. So, bird number one sprinkled as a chatat we know is fine. Bird number two sprinkled as a chatat we know is fine. Okay, and we just declared that. Bird number three as a chatat, we don't know if it's okay, so that one we're assuming worst-case scenario is bad. Now let's go to the ola. Of the three that were sprinkled as an ola, the worst case scenario states that two of those were the original chatats, and therefore only one of them is kosher. So we've got two chatats, one ola, and therefore, says the Mishnah, mechetza kasher, three out of the six birds would have then been performed correctly, umechetza pasul, and three out of the six birds we assume to have been invalid, and again, that would be two chatatz and one ola, and as you said before, the opposite applies to the olot as well.
With all due respect, that's not logical. It's not logical because if you rejected the third one, then one of the other ones certainly has to be good, a valid, kosher one. If you didn't reject it, then you got...
Why is that true? That's not true at all.
Why?
I'll tell you the case. Very simple. Okay. Very simple. Okay? You got three on top. Those three are all from Kinim Stumos, yes?
Right. Okay.
Okay? Not three on top. We're starting with on bottom here. We're doing Chataos first. Okay, those three are from the Kinim Stumos. I did on bottom. Three on bottom. How many were valid? Of those three?
Two.
Two of them were valid, correct? Right. Now I take the two Chataot and the remaining one, I do it on top. How many were valid? Only the one. That's the Mishnah's case. It's only if you assume that the Chataot are the kosher ones, then... But we assume the worst-case scenario. Worst-case scenario is all of the ones from the Kinim are done below, followed by the remainder being done above. That's the worst-case scenario here, and that's going to leave us with two and then one.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. V'chatat shnayim b'chova. What about the reverse case? Okay? In which the chataot are twice as many as the other birds. Okay? And again, the Kohen did half above and half below. So in this case, let's say we've got four chataot and one pair. Okay, meaning essentially what we have to bring is five chatats and one ola, because again, we've got the four chataot and one yet undeclared pair. What's the halacha there if the Kohen did half above, half below? Okay, so the halacha is haminyan shebachova kasher. The number of chatats that is in the chova, that will be kosher. Why? Let's think for a moment again of our worst case scenario. Okay, our worst case scenario is as follows. Again, essentially what we have is five chatats and one ola, right? Because we've got four distinct set-aside chatats and one pair of undecided birds. So, let's do the olas first to make it simpler. In the olas, I have three of my previously decided chatats are all done as olas, so none of them at all are valid. Okay, that's the easy part. I now have remaining one designated chatat and one kanstuma. Of the kanstuma, when I do it, what will happen? I will have one that is valid. I will have two that are valid. Okay, one of the chataot that was not brought in the wrong place. So again, three of the four chataot were brought in the ola place. Now when I bring them in the chatat place, I've got one of the remaining chataot has to be there because there are four. I can't have four in the other place because I'm only bringing three of them above. Okay, so the fourth one will automatically be brought in the right place, plus one of the two in the kan. So the number of chataot will be correct, will be the number of, as the Mishnah says, haminyan shebachova kasher. There were two total birds in the chova and the kanstuma. That number of chataot will be kosher. So again, one more time for the recap. I've essentially got four designated chataot, one extra pair. I assume worst-case scenario... I'm doing half and half, okay? So three are being brought as an ola, three are being brought as a chatas. The ones that are being brought as an ola, very easy to see, none of them are valid, because we assume those are three of the four chataot. The remaining chatat, as well as the pair, in the worst case scenario, are brought all as chataot, which would mean that two of those three are kosher, the remaining chatat, as well as one of the two birds that's in the pair. All good?
Yes.
Okay.
Please. If I got this, so you still got three correct.
Two correct.
Are correct.
No, the third one's rejected.
Two of the chataot.
Okay. Two of the five.
Yes, two of the five essentially are brought correctly, and the sixth one is, which would have been an ola, is not. Yeah. Now, v'chein ola shenit arva b'chova. What about the reverse case with the olos? Fortunately, this is just a repeat. Maybe it's a good test to see if we really still remember what we're talking about. But chein ola shenit arva b'chova. So now you've got olas that are mixed up with kanstumas. So in kasher l'minyan olot shebechova, we said earlier, the halacha is you may only bring, okay, that number of olot that are in the chova. So again, if let's say you had two kanstumas mixed up with one ola, you may bring up to two olas with certainty. And that's it, no chataot. Okay, that's the original halacha. Let's say the guy, again, didn't listen, and he just brought half above, half below. Again, half he performed as an ola, half he performed as a chatat. So then, here are the two cases. Chuvash naim be'ola, if the number of obligatory birds, meaning there was one konstuma for each additional ola, okay, so there's twice as many birds in the konstuma as there were designated olot, mechetza kasher, mechetza pasul, half will be kosher and half pasul, two olas will be kosher and one chatat will be kosher in that case, or however, ola shnayim bechova, if the ola, just like we said with the chatas here, is twice as many as the birds in the chova, so again, let's say four olot and one konstuma, so essentially five olot and one chatat, but the last ola and chatat are undesignated, haminyan shebechova kasher. The amount of olot that were equal to the number of birds in the kan stumas are going to be kosher, meaning two out of the five are going to be kosher, just like we said with the chatat. Okay. Ready for the last Mishnah?
Yep.
Okay, so this
take
here... Yeah, take
six.
Sorry?
Weren't there six birds?
Wait for it. You're going to see there's actually a really cool line at the end of this Mishnah. So I'm just going to tell you, I'm going to be heavily reliant on my notes here because it's really, really hard to follow what's going on. My notes are written according to Rashi in Zevachim. Yes.
What was before was easy, right?
Before I was able to more or less reason through the Mishnah. And if I would catch myself making a mistake, here I'm pretty much going to try to go it line by line between the two. This is according, so basically there are two major approaches to this Mishnah. I am not giving you both approaches to the Mishnah, unless you have a wish to do so, in which case we can definitely follow up afterwards. But Rashi in Zvachim has an approach where he explains this Mishnah. That's the approach that the Kahati, that Rabbi Kahati, or maybe not Rabbi, I don't know if he was a rabbi or not when he wrote these, or ever, but he was actually an accountant. Amazing story. Do you guys know the story of Kahati? Kahati.
Kahati, yeah.
So his name was, I think he was a rabbi, Pinchas Kahati. And he was
in the library.
So yeah, I mean, it's a very, very popular Mishnayot. I'm sure you've seen the Kati Mishnayos. He was he did kind of like what our scroll did, like an elucidation based on the Mefarshim. So how did it start? He was an accountant in Jerusalem, and he was involved with Zionist leadership, religious Zionist leadership, and he was actually kind of got involved in preparing small Mishnayos booklets for people to learn that the state or one of its affiliates was distributing, and they asked him, can you write just a basic commentary so that any layperson in Israel can pick up a Mishnah and learn it? And he prepared these packets, and eventually they got turned into a sefer that is very, very widespread and unbelievable. When I was in yeshiva, I went around with someone, I said, let's try to make a list of what makes a successful Torah sefer, meaning there's been so much stuff written on Torah. What makes something a sefer in the last 300-400 years, valuable? And this was like our number one case study, was like Kahati, because it's every single place has one. You cannot find a place that studies Mishnah, a shul, that doesn't have a set of Kahati Mishnayos. And we looked at some other things also, but it's just interesting. Most of the Sfarim we noted then became, not most, but many of the Sfarim became famous not because of their content, but because of the reputation of their authors. If you think about it, it's a very interesting note. So most of the Sfarim that we have from the last few hundred years are, let's say, responsa of major rabbis, which are massive contributions, obviously. We have halacha Sfarim. We have different things. And I remember we went through the whole list of all these influential Sfarim, but Kahati was the one that was like, he was a nobody. Worked in a bank, I think. He was a bank clerk or an accountant, one of the two. And he just made such a great work that everyone's like, we've got to get this.
It came out around 25, 30 years ago. I remember when it came out.
I thought maybe, it was even a little bit earlier.
Maybe a little earlier.
I think it was more like 50 years ago.
But the whole set at that time.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I decided to learn a Mishnah in memory of somebody.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I was told to get the Kati.
That's the gold standard.
I remember when
and that was probably 30 years ago.
Yeah,
I would imagine it was already. Yeah, it was around.
By the time it came here, it was already maybe.
Right, right. And now they have English translations of the Kahati, which is kind of overkill, in my opinion. Yeah. But meaning to translate this text. The whole idea was to make it accessible. So just write something that's accessible in English. There's kedusha to the words of Kahati that you have to translate them exactly as they are. But anyways, that's just a side rant of mine. Okay, let's move on to this final Mishnah. Let's move on to this final Mishnah. So Haisha Shamra. Okay, so you've got a poor woman, and she promises to bring a plain cane when she has a male. Hare alai cane kishe'eled zachar. Okay, she says, when I have a male child, I will bring a cane. Okay, what this implies, okay, is that she has to bring two kinim if she has a male. One of her regular childbirth cane, plus the one that she has promised here. So therefore, yalda zachar, miviyash de kinim. What are they? Achat l'nidra v'achat l'tilchovata. One is the obligatory cane of a chatat and an ola. The other is a neder, which is something she has to bring, two olot. Now,
is a neder considered to be a voluntary or a...
Yes. No, it's considered to be voluntary. There was two types of voluntary, neder and nidava.
Right.
Okay, neder was the one which is on me, and nidava is these particular ones.
The first one's from the right there. She gives birth, she has to be the corporal.
That's the obligatory one, yes. The obligatory one is obligatory.
Yeah.
I mean, once you make the promise, the voluntary one is obligatory too. What?
You can't make an adava of the obligatory.
Correct. Meaning you cannot bring a chatat as an adava. We explained in the very first mission of the Masechet.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Nitanatam la kohen. Okay. She gives them to the kohen, and this is the easy part of the Mishnah. Veha kohen tzarich la so chalosh predot milamalan vachat milamatam. See, so they have not been designated yet. You've got four birds. Three of those birds we know are supposed to be olos, because it was a voluntary two ola kan, plus an additional one and one kan. And they're all grouped together. Theoretically, the kohen should be doing one, two, three, should be done properly like an ola on top, one should be done on the bottom. However, as you can imagine, this is not a very common case. What's the kohen used to having people coming and doing two childbirths in one go? So what does the kohen do? Lo asachin, ela asa shtayim lemalan ushtayim lematan. If he, by mistake, did two above and two below, which again is a reasonable assumption, it's not like the Kohen's a bad guy. He didn't ask a very complicated question. The Kohen is used to every day. People are bringing in for two childbirths, for two tumas. So he did two and two. Velo nimlach, and he didn't ask.
The first was he thought for both chova. That's
yes.
It says here the comment.
Yep. That's. So velo nimlach, and he did not ask. Tzricha lahavi od preda achat viakrivena limalan. Okay. She needs to bring an additional ola. Because basically one of her olas was done improperly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, straightforward. Very, very simple first case. Okay? Now, this is all, says the Mishnah, mimin echad. Okay, so again, the halacha was if the kohen accidentally sprayed two above and two below, and all the birds are mimin echad of one type of bird, meaning either all torim or either b'nei yonah, she needs to bring one single ola, what we call a preda. Okay, it's that you see in the Mishnah the word preda. Preda is one that's alone. Did I hear it from Rabbi Taylor this week? Yeah, I believe it was Rabbi Taylor who said this for a Torah on I think it was Sunday, because I don't think I was here yesterday for davening. But he said, "Why does it say Zachoris Asher Asal Lecha Amalek? Why is it in the speaking to the individual and not to the collective? Why isn't it Zichrues Asher Asal Lachem, not collective, actually plural? Why is it Zachoris Asher Asal Lecha in the singular or collective as opposed to in the plural?" Because they were in Refidim, they were attacked. Refidim is the same word as Preda. Parad, Nifrad, okay, is to be separated. So because they were separated, because they were individuals, they weren't acting as a group. That's why Zachorit Asher Asa Lecha Amalek, that's why you were attacked as an individual. I think Rabbi Taylor said that very nice. But that's the same word, Preda. Okay, Preda is a single bird. You got to bring one single bird. It's really the first... Not the first time we've majorly dealt with bringing single birds, but this is the requirement here. This is all mimin echad, mishne minim. Now, so I'm going to read you my notes. If the kohen accidentally sprayed two above and two below, and the two kinim were brought from different types of birds, and he doesn't know which of the two types was brought first. Okay, so what happened is, so the woman brought two torim and two b'nei yonah. Okay? The kohen says, I did two above and two below. And he's like, oh, shoot, which one did I do first? I don't remember. Okay, so he brought one Tor and one Ben Yonah above, and one Tor and one Ben Yonah below. So again, the woman had to bring an obligatory and a voluntary. The voluntary consists of two olas. The obligatory consists of a chata dan ola. The Kohen accidentally did one Torah and one Benyona above, and one Torah and one Benyona below. And he doesn't remember of the ones that were done below, shoot, did I do it first Torah and then Benyona? Or did I do it first Benyona and then Torah? The ramification of this is, whichever type of bird was brought first below is going to be the pair for childbirth. Mm-hmm. Okay, because that's the one where there's one ola and one chatat. So again, the ones that were done above, everyone's happy with, because they're olas. The ones that were done below, only the first of the two is valid. Correct? Everyone following me? Only the first of the two of the chatas is valid, because there's only one chatat to be brought. The second one, which was performed as a chatat, is the one that requires replacement. But the Kohen doesn't know whether the second one was a Benyona or a Tor. He doesn't remember which type of bird it was. So in the first case, you just have to bring a single bird as an Ola. Now, the Kohen doesn't know, was it this type of bird or this type of bird? So what do we do? Therefore, for each of the possible second groups, an Ola is missing. Therefore, she must bring one Ola from each type. Okay? So therefore, says the Mishnah, Tavishtaim, she must bring two, one Benyona and one Tor, and both of those are going to be Olas, on the possibility that either of them was the Ola that was performed incorrectly, meaning where the blood was brought as a chatat.
Can I ask a question that maybe should have been asked a long time ago?
Sure.
Aren't you doing, it's like expert prayers for no reason. Aren't you by doing that to cover your bases, mm-hmm. aren't you doing an extra sacrifice that doesn't count? And isn't that an aver of some sort?
Excellent question. And so I made brief reference to it one time. But the truth is, the analogy to prayer is fantastic. The analogy, because first of all, prayer replaces korbanot. And the halacha is actually identical here between prayer and korbanot. In certain cases, if one is unsure of a halacha in regards to their Shemona Esrei, the poskim recommend praying something what is called a tfilat nedava. I don't know if this is, it's not widespread, because there aren't too many situations in which we do this. And I'll tell you a really cool story about a tfilat nedava in a moment. But
can you repeat the question, sorry?
Sorry, so the question was, is it not inappropriate to bring korbanot just to cover your bases? Isn't that a violation of basically bringing extra korbanot and or its equivalent in tefillah, just like we wouldn't just say an extra Shemona Esrei to cover our bases? So why exactly are we doing that with korbanot? So the answer is, when you have the option to add something that's voluntary, then it's okay to cover your bases. Because just like the woman could say, I want to bring two olas, so making her replace these olas, we're kind of like lumping it in together and saying, just like you can normally volunteer, we're asking you to volunteer here. Okay? Same thing with tefillah. So some cases, again, of situations where the poskim disagree whether one should repeat Shemona Esrei or not. Even the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan, I think is the one that I remember more, recommends you daven what's called a tefillat nedava. Tefillat nedava is you have in mind, if this is an obligation that I need to repeat Shemona Esrei, it's done al tnai, on condition. If I needed to repeat Shemona Esrei, meaning if that opinion is correct, so I'm repeating my Shemona Esrei. And if not, this is a voluntary tefillah. Now, voluntary tefillahs. Right, so there, it's generally not so much with Mashiva Ruach, HaMelech HaMishpat, some people would do it for Mashiva Ruach, usually it's more clear as to whether or not you need to repeat. But there are some situations by Vitein Talamatar. Yeah. There are some situations where people would do this. But the bottom line is about a Tfilat Nedava, you have to be, just one second.
Sure.
Just to be careful, just a practical note, tefillah nedava, you're supposed to, first of all, make sure, if you're doing a voluntary tefillah, it better be a darn good one, right? You're adding 19 extra brachos, and numerous times you're saying Hashem's name, the post can point out, you should be very careful to have the correct kavana, especially if you're doing tefillah nedava, not with the minyan, meaning if you've davened Shemona Esrei together with the minyan, and everyone's finished, and now you're like, oh shoot, I don't remember if I said X or Y, and you're davening theoretically by yourself in a room full of people, you should be extra careful to have kavana. Some say you should even add in your own personal prayer to make it personalized, but that's just a side point if you ever end up davening tefillat nedava. Go ahead.
So I was just going to say, the logic also depends whether you made a bracha or not in the interim, in the Shemona Esrei. If you haven't made the bracha, you can go back and start again if you said the words incorrectly.
Yes.
Right, so they, yeah, but the logic of this applies to what the Shemona Esrei issue. This logic has
correct.
We're rejected. Remember, I said the logic of one can apply
exactly.
to another.
So that's that's actually a great an excellent point.
Yeah.
That the question that you had, Jonathan, yesterday about relevance. Well, we've now found an analogous case. Tefillah can use some of the laws that are from Masechet Kinim.
Exactly.
Okay.
The logic.
I once went to Daven Mariv somewhere. The halacha is it's ideal to have 10 people davening Shemona Esrei, even though theoretically you can go as low as 6 to have a minion. Mm-hmm. And ideally you should have 10 people. I was once at a minion. We had 9 people that had not davened, and there was one person there who had already davened. And this person was very concerned that we would be davening with a minion of not 10 people actually saying Shemona Esrei, even though, again, theoretically it's fine. Theoretically you can go as low as 6. This person was very concerned, so they said, it's Filat Nadava Shmona Esrei. I told them, I said, you know, it's kind of questionable to do that. Not to mention, who says Tfilat Nadava counts for a minion for a particular tefillah? It's a good question. Okay.
The sort of thing applies when you bench. You can have 7 people as opposed to
correct.
6 who didn't. And the answer to that is, what does it bother you if somebody else has a meal? That's the joke between the two.
Yes.
Right.
Although of the 3 people, they need to have at least eaten or drank something.
That's
not
right.
bread, but
yeah.
They can't be doing nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas in a minion, the 6 people can be entirely silent during Shemona Esrei.
Right.
They just have to answer amen to the answer. Okay.
Yes.
Last case.
Right.
Pirsha Nidra. Okay? Now, what does this mean? So again, I'm just going to read you from my notes. If the poor woman, who would anyways be bringing a kan for having a child, promises to bring a specific type of kan, Pirsha Nidra, she said which type of bird she plans on bringing as her neder portion.
Okay. Designation.
So again, she has not designated, but we'll see what happens.
Okay.
Okay?
Well, a certain kind of animal.
Okay, we're talking about which of the 2 types of birds.
Birds, right.
Okay, so she said at childbirth, okay, she said, if I have a male, I'm going to bring a neder of bird X, either Torim or Bnei Yona. And then, of course, she forgets. So what's the halacha? Tzricha lavi od shalosh predot. Mimin echad. Okay? So let's try to go through the cases over here. Here we go. So in general, if she has a male and she promised a particular type but forgot, she must actually... if she did not forget, let's start with the simple case. She promised, let's say, Torim. She remembers Torim. She brings 2 pairs, 1 of the regular childbirth one, plus 2 Torim. Okay? Now, it could be that for the childbirth one, she also used Torim, or it could be that she used Bnei Yona. That doesn't really matter. The childbirth one was not designated as a particular type of bird, but the neder one was. So again, we know that she said, I'm going to bring 2 Torim as Olas. She has to bring 2 Torim as an Olas. If she forgot which one she promised, and then she decides to bring 4 birds of the same type. Meaning, theoretically, if she forgot what she promised, she's got to bring a pair of these and a pair of those. But what she said was, you know what, I forgot which one I promised, so I'll just bring 4 of the same type. Why she thought to do that, I'm not exactly sure, but that says Rashi and Kahati are the case of this Mishnah. So now, the Kohen comes, so she brings 4 birds of the same type. And she may have actually been obligated to bring 2 birds of the other type.
Mm-hmm.
So now, the Kohen brings these birds, and what happens? That's 2 above, 2 below. So we know one of them is invalid. So she's got to bring the extra for that group, in case what she promised was the ones that she actually brought, plus she's got to bring a full pair of the other group, in case that's what she's promised. So, tzricha lavi od shalosh predot. She's got to bring 3, right? 2 of the other type, plus 1 of the type that was brought. Everybody understand why that is? So one more time again.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the obligatory one can be from either type, but the voluntary one, she doesn't remember which type of bird she promised. So she's got to bring the other type of bird that she didn't bring, plus, just like we saw in the last case, the one that was performed incorrectly. That's mimin echad if she brought them all of the same type. Mishnei minin, and here we go. Okay, now we go to the other case.
It's 3-6.
Just want to go back. If she brought from 2 different types, trying to find where we are over here. Okay, here we go. If she brought from 2 different types, meaning she brought 2 Torim and 2 Bnei Yonah, And, okay, the Kohen did one above, one below, and he doesn't know which one was brought first for the Chataot. So again, he doesn't know if he actually brought the Torim as the voluntary, or if he brought the Bnei Yonah as the voluntary. Okay, because again, she brought both types. The Kohen doesn't remember which one did I do as the first Chatas, and which one did I do as the second Chatas. So what do you got to do? Tavi Arba. She's now got to bring four. This is a very complicated explanation, and we'll end with this. What?
Oh, you're okay.
I'm a case ahead of you, yes. So Tavi Arba, she needs to bring four. So let's think of the possibilities here. And this, I actually have a chart here in my notes, because this was, you know, we're going to do our best to illustrate, okay? We've got two Torim, two Bnei Yonah. Okay? We don't know whether she was obligated to bring two Olot of Torim or two Olot of Bnei Yonah. Let's assume the worst case scenario, which is that she brought as her olas the wrong type of bird. If she brings the wrong type of bird, what's the halacha? She needs to bring the other type of bird too. So basically, that's going to be the simplest understanding, in which case we assume that she always brought the wrong kind of ola, and therefore she needs to bring two of these and two of those. Okay, that's a simpler case. It also happens to be, and again, this is going to be relevant for the future, that even if she brought the right kind, she would still have needed to bring one, right? Meaning, if let's say she got the kind correct of the ola, she still, because one of the olas was done incorrectly as a chatat, because the Kohen did two below, so she would still need to bring one of those. So now why don't we have to bring six, which was referenced? Why don't we then have to bring three of each type, two in case it was wrong, plus one in case you need a single replacement, two in case it was wrong, plus one because of a single replacement, because those two cases are mutually exclusive. Because if the type was right, it can't be wrong. And if the type was wrong, it can't have been performed incorrectly, right? Because she didn't bring that type. So basically, even though we could have a situation where you're obligated to bring two of those or replace the one, we can cover all of our bases just by bringing two of each. Because the most you would ever have to bring is two, and the least is one. Again, let's go through that one more time. Let's assume the case is, again, two Torim, two Bnei Yonah. Okay, two of each type. Let's assume the Bnei Yonah were the Olas, which means that she's obligated, if she promised Bnei Yonah, she's obligated only in one. If she promised Torim, she's obligated in two because she didn't bring any Torim as an Ola. Now let's think of the reverse case. If she promised Bnei... Now, let's assume that the one that was brought was Bnei Yonah. If she promised Bnei Yonah, she has to bring one. If she promised Torim, she's got to bring two. So we see in the maximum she has to bring is two of these and two of these, even though there is an additional one in each case that's sort of up there flying in the air, it will be covered by her bringing two and two. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's ruminate on that for a day or so. If you want, you can borrow my chart, or we can try to bring in some model birds. I know that the people who give these as dafyomi actually have these like really extensive bird charts, which maybe I should have brought in to begin with. I don't remember if it was Rabbi Wolf or Rabbi Rosner had these really great illustrations when we did it with dafyomi, but those may help here.
This is still the example where one is a chova and
one is a neder. Yes. Okay.
I will not be here tomorrow. They are going away for a day.
Okay. Enjoy the trip.
I'll take this. Try to.